This audio program is brought to you courtesy of Audible.com. Audible, audio that speaks to you wherever you are.
There is a tide in the affairs of men which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. Omitted, all the voyage of their life is bound in shallows and in miseries. On such a full sea are we now afloat, and we must take the current when it serves, or lose our ventures.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot in Agatha Christie's Taken at the Flood.
It was the autumn of 1944, and the Blitz had returned to London. But now it was the flying bombs and the rockets, and no one could tell where or when they might fall. On that particular night, I was sitting in my club. I'm not what is called a clubable person, but since I live in London, it is necessary to have a club, Nespa.
All my old friends seem to be popping off one after another, dropping like flies.
Every club has its resident bore, and mine was no exception. The other members had taken refuge behind their newspapers, but I was hanging on to Major Porter's every word, grateful for anything that would distract me from the air raid.
Gordon Clode's the latest to go. Notice in the Times this morning, on October the 5th, as a result of enemy action. No address given. It's just round the corner from my place. One of those big houses on the top of Camden Hill. You know where I mean.
Yes, Major, I know.
Poor old devil, he'd only just got back from the States. Been out there on some government scheme or other. Uh-huh. Got married while he was over there. She was a young widow, young enough to be his daughter. A Mrs. Underhay. As a matter of fact, I knew her first husband out in Nigeria. Did I ever tell you I'd been out in Nigeria?
Yes, Major, you have mentioned the fact from time to time.
It's a funny thing, these rocket bombs. You never know what they're going to do. Uh-huh. This one blew in the basement and ripped off the roof. First floor was left practically intact. There were six people in the house, cook and butler and a maid, Gordon Clode and his wife and her brother, a commando type. Mm-hmm. The brother preferred to take his chance on the first floor and survived. The rest of them were sheltering in the basement, and Clode and the servants were killed instantly. But his wife survived, God knows how.
And this Gordon Clode, he was a wealthy man?
Must have been worth well over a million. Oh. And he'd only been married a few weeks. So the girl can't be more than 25. And now she's a widow for the second time. At any rate, that's what she thinks.
What exactly do you mean by that, Major?
Well, as I said, I knew her first husband when I was out in Nigeria. Nice chap, district commissioner at one time. The girl was an actress. He'd met her in Cape Town when she was out there with some touring company. Down on her luck, by all accounts. Rather pretty, I knew. She got carried away by the thought of living out in the great wide open spaces. She had no idea what she was letting herself in for, of course.
But she was not happy?
She hated the bush. She was terrified of the natives, and she was bored to death. Mm-hmm. Couldn't stick it at any price. It hit poor Underhay pretty hard. But he did the decent thing. He sent the girl home and agreed to give her a divorce. He was a funny, old-fashioned kind of chap in some ways, particularly in his ideas about the ladies. And he was an RC into the bargain. Didn't hold with divorce. He said to me, there are other ways of giving a woman her freedom. Now, look here, old boy. I said, don't do anything foolish. No woman in the world is worth you putting a bullet through your head. Mm. Yeah, that one was a bit close for comfort. Huh. Where was I? Oh, yes. He said that wasn't his idea at all. He'd got no relatives to bother about. If a report of his death got back, that'd be enough to make Rosaline, that was her name, a widow. And what about you, I said. Well, he replies, maybe a Mr. Enoch Arden will turn up somewhere 1,000 miles away and start life anew.
I'm sorry, I do not understand. Who is this Enoch Arden?
Sorry, old chap, you wouldn't know, being a foreigner and all that. Oh. No, he's a character in a poem by Tennyson. Ah. Happily married, takes a job as a boatswain on a long voyage, gets shipwrecked, and nothing is heard of him for years. His wife marries again. Eventually, he finds his way back to England, but when he discovers about his wife, he decides to keep quiet and doesn't reveal who he is. Not to tell her, never to let her know.
I will make a point of reading it.
Anyway, to get back to Underhay, 6 months after our conversation, I heard that he died of a fever up in the bush somewhere. The headman came back with a few words scrawled in Underhay's writing, saying his natives had done all that they could, but he was afraid he was pegging out. So there you have it. Maybe Underhay's buried up country in the middle of equatorial Africa, but maybe he isn't.
Oh.
And if he isn't, the recently widowed Mrs. Claude is in for a bit of a shock. No right to the million she's got her claws on, and a bigamist on top of it all, and serve her right. She sounds like a regular little gold digger. Oh, my goodness, that's torn it.
What is the matter?
That was Jeremy Claude, Gordon Claude's brother.
Oh.
How was I to know he was hiding himself away behind his newspaper? The fellow's a solicitor or something. I hope he won't have me up for defamation of character. Oh, how very unfortunate.
But nothing came of it, and it was to be nearly 2 years before I heard anything about the Claude family again. They lived in Walmsley Vale, an old world and rather run-down little town 30 miles outside London. They had all of them, in their various ways, been dependent upon the wealthy Gordon Claude, but the full implications of his leaving his entire fortune to his young widow did not begin to sink in until after the war was over.
I can't get over you not being in Wren's uniform anymore. You always looked so smart in it.
Well, to tell you the truth, Mums, I never want to set eyes on it again. I can't tell you how marvellous it is just to be able to slouch about in a tweed skirt and a jumper, though I wouldn't mind being able to buy a few new clothes. I always depended on Uncle Gordon for that.
The trouble is that we all depended on him for everything. We just took it for granted he'd always be around to help us out. If only he'd come straight down here when he got back to England instead of staying up in London.
I suppose none of us ever imagined that he'd get married at his age. We thought we were all the family he needed.
You make it sound as if we were all idlers and spongers, Lynn. It was never like that. After all, your Uncle Jeremy's done very well for himself in his solicitor's business, and Lionel has his doctor's practice.
But we knew there was always money available if we wanted it. Over and over again he told us there was no need to stint and save. His cheques always came in regularly to provide us with our little luxuries.
And he was the one who encouraged me to stay on here after your father died. If only I'd known that something like this might happen, I could have moved to a smaller house. Now it's just a terrible struggle to make ends meet. I really don't know how we're going to manage.
How did he happen to meet this Rosaline woman? You never mentioned her in your letters.
He came across her on some boat on the way back from South America. After all those years, after all those secretaries and typists and housekeepers who tried to get him into their clutches.
She's good-looking, I suppose.
Well, dear, I think myself she's rather a silly face. Of course, the poor girl was blitzed, and it's my opinion she's never quite recovered from the shock of it all. She's a mass of nerves, and sometimes she looks positively half-witted. I can't imagine she could ever have made much of a companion for poor Gordon. And then, of course, I hate to say it, but she's not a lady.
What does that matter nowadays?
It matters in the country, dear. I simply mean that she isn't one of us. Of course, we've all gone out of our way to be kind and polite and welcome her amongst us for Gordon's sake.
And she's living at Furrowbank?
Well, where else was there for her to go when she came out of the nursing home? She's been staying there with her brother ever since.
What's he like?
Dreadful young man. Rude.
What's his name?
David Hunter. He's Irish. Of course, they're not people one has ever heard of. She was a widow when she met Gordon, a Mrs. Underhay. One can't help asking oneself what kind of a widow would be likely to be travelling from South America in wartime. One can't help thinking she was probably on the lookout for a rich husband.
And so she got the lot?
Everything. Gordon had always given us to understand we would all be taken care of if anything were to happen to him. But when he married, he made a will entirely in favour of this woman. I'm sure if he'd lived, he would have made certain we would have been generously looked after, but as things are. Oh, just look at all those bills. Investments aren't producing what they used to, of course, and taxes are going up all the time. I don't want to burden you with all this just when you've come home, but I simply don't know what I'm going to do.
Couldn't Gordon's widow... What did you say her name was?
Rosaline.
Couldn't she help?
We've got no right to anything. Anything at all.
You've got a moral right, surely?
It wouldn't be very nice, dear, asking a favour of somebody one doesn't like very much.
So what about the rest of the family? Can't they help? Or are we all in the same boat?
Oh, dear. How can I possibly know? Your cousin Rowley seems to be keeping his head above water, but farmers always do, don't they? If you take my advice, you'll get on and marry him before somebody else snaps him up.
Yes, Mums.
Your Uncle Gordon always used to say you were made for each other.
Yes, I remember.
And as for how the rest of the family are doing, well, I can't help noticing that your Uncle Jeremy has begun to look very old and grey all of a sudden.
Is anything the matter, Jeremy?
What do you mean, Francis? What should be the matter?
You've barely touched your food. I would rather you told me.
Oh, he'll have to know, of course, sooner or later. I'm afraid you made a bad bargain, Francis.
Is it money?
Oh, yes, it's money.
Shall we have to sell up everything? Is the firm going smash? My dear, do tell me. I can't go on guessing.
We went through rather a bad crisis 2 years ago when young Williams absconded and there were heavy losses out in the Far East.
Never mind the whys, they are so unimportant.
Oh, I was relying on Gordon to see us straight. I always relied on him. His death was a catastrophe for me.
Shall we be bankrupt?
It's a good deal worse than that.
Embezzlement or something of that kind?
I've drawn on funds that were committed to my charge. So far, I've been able to cover my tracks.
And now it's all going to come out.
Unless I can find the necessary money. Very quickly.
So stupid that I haven't anything of my own. Her father put paid to any chance of that.
There's your marriage settlement. But I'm afraid that's gone too. I'm sorry, Francis. As I said, you made a bad bargain.
What on earth do you mean by that?
You've always been a most loyal, devoted wife, my dear. But I can hardly flatter myself that you would have accepted me under different circumstances.
You mean that Lord Trenton's daughter wouldn't have stooped to marry humble Jeremy Clode if he hadn't saved her father from the wolves and from the stewards of the Jockey Club? I married you because I was in love with you.
I can't imagine what you could possibly have seen in me. And now...
Let's get things clear. You've fallen foul of the law. You may be prosecuted, go to prison even. Well... I don't exactly come from a respectable moral family. My father may have been charming, but he was really a bit of a crook and a thoroughly bad hat. My cousin Charles narrowly escaped prosecution and was bundled off to the colonies. I don't suppose I'm particularly straight myself. There just hasn't been any opportunity to be otherwise. But what I have got is plenty of courage, and I'm loyal.
Oh, my dear.
So, what are we going to do? I suppose you've done all the obvious things, like a mortgage on this house.
I'm afraid so.
Then who can we touch? I suppose there's only one possibility. Gordon's widow, the dark Rosaline.
Oh, it would have to be a large sum. And the money can't come out of the capital. It's only hers for life.
So what happens when she dies?
Well, it comes to Gordon's next of kin. Myself, Lionel, Adela, and Morris's son, Rowley.
Not that it matters much. We'll all be dead and buried before she's even middle-aged. How old is she? 25? 26?
Oh, we might ask her for a loan, I suppose, as members of the family. But there must be no suggestion of urgency.
The trouble is, we don't really know what she's like. And in any case, it's not Rosaline we shall have to deal with. That brother of hers has got her completely under his thumb.
A most unattractive young man.
Oh, no. He's attractive, all right. And rather unscrupulous, I should imagine. But then as far as that goes, I'm unscrupulous too. We're not going to be beaten, Jeremy. There's got to be some way, even if I have to rob a bank.
But I always imagine that farmers are done rather well out of the war, really.
It won't last. The men who've come back from the fighting aren't interested in working on small farms anymore. And they'll expect a pretty big rise in their wages. It's the end of the road for people like me. In the future, the only farmers who are going to survive are those who've got the resources to go in for it in a big way. And that's where Uncle Gordon's money would have come in. He'd have backed me. He promised he would.
And now?
And now that wife of his goes off up to London and spends a couple of £1,000 on a mink coat. Well, I'll just have to manage as best I can, I suppose.
We've managed pretty well so far.
Yes. It's strange the way things have worked out. I've been stuck down here on the farm all through the war, while you've been all over the world. I imagine you won't find it easy to settle down again.
I don't see it that way at all.
Then you haven't changed your mind?
I still want to marry you, that's what you mean. Unless you've changed your mind.
Oh, I've not changed. Nothing changes down on the farm. You should know that.
All right, then. Let's get married.
Should we set a date for the wedding?
Whenever you like.
June or thereabouts?
Yes. Why not? What's she like?
What's who like?
This Rosaline woman. Mum says she's half-witted.
Well, intellect isn't exactly her strong point. But I think she only seems so stupid because she's being so frightfully careful.
Careful about what?
Mainly, I imagine, about her accent. She's got a bit of a brogue, you know. But you'll be able to see for yourself this evening at Aunt Kathy's party. It's in your honour, you know, to celebrate your return. Though, I should warn you that Aunt Kathy is battier than ever.
I shouldn't have thought that was possible. I've always wondered how Uncle Lionel came by her.
Yes, she probably materialized from the spirit world. She must be a terrible embarrassment to him.
How lovely and brown you are, my dear. All that time in Egypt, I suppose. Oh, I can't tell you how I envy you. Did you manage to read that book on the pyramid prophecies that I sent you?
Well, you see, Aunt Kathy, I really didn't have much time.
I wish you'd been able to find the time to put some of the incantations into practice, being on the spot, so to speak. I was absolutely fascinated by the chapter on Hathor, the great celestial cow, and the way in which she was incarnated in the sistrum. It really explains everything, don't you think?
I really don't know very much about that kind of thing.
Oh, once you're drawn into it, you won't be able to resist. Oh, but here is dear Rosaline. Rosaline, this is my niece Lynn, Adela's daughter.
Pleased to meet you. This is my brother, David Hunter.
Hello.
Hello.
And do you like living at Firebank?
Oh, I think it's a lovely house.
Poor old Gordon did himself pretty well. No expense spared. Pity he didn't draw the line at those ghastly glass tables and chairs.
Yes, they are rather an acquired taste.
So, you're the wren who's just back from the wars.
Yes, it's good to be home again.
Now, let's all go into supper. I think it's better than calling it dinner. People don't expect so much. Just as well in times like these. Oh, you must sit next to me, Jeremy. I want to hear all about this Mrs. Lester, who's come to live in Walmsley Heath.
Yes.
I gather she's an expert in spirit writing.
So, this is where you've got to. Indulging in a little solitary vice.
Aunt Kathy simply can't abide smoking at table. I've been dying for a cigarette all through dinner.
So have I. You into all this ritual incantation and Ouija boarding that your aunt goes on about?
Hardly. There doesn't seem much place for that kind of thing in the modern world. Particularly after the atomic bomb. Rather an over-efficient way of disposing of your enemies.
Give me the good old days of black magic. Wax figures, spells at the turning of the moon, killing off your neighbour's cattle.
You really don't believe there was such a thing as black magic?
Perhaps not. But at any rate, people did at least try to do something, unlike nowadays. After all, you and your family can't do much about Rosaline and myself, can you?
It's a little late in the day for that.
I imagine you were all pretty smug about expecting to get the old boy's loot.
You must remember, we'd been taught to think so for years.
And now you've learned that nothing's safe. So what are you going to do about it?
Buy some wax and practice black magic.
Oh, no. I'm sure your methods will be much more modern and efficient. But you won't win. And to warn you, don't try to do down Rosaline. What do you think of her?
She's very lovely. But she doesn't seem to be enjoying herself much.
She's scared. She's always been rather scared. She drifts into things and doesn't know what it's all about. Shall I tell you about Rosaline?
If you like.
I do like. She started by being stage-struck and drifted into the theatre. She wasn't any good, of course. She got into a third-rate touring company that was going out to South Africa. She rather liked the idea of South Africa, but the company got stranded in Cape Town and she drifted into marriage with a British government official working in Nigeria. She didn't like Nigeria, and I don't think she liked her husband much. Fortunately, he died of fever, and Rosaline got a small pension.
And then she ran into Uncle Gordon.
Don't be so impatient. When the war started, she drifted onto a boat for South America. She didn't like South America very much, so she drifted onto another boat, and there she met Gordon Claude and told him all about her sad life. So they got married in New York and came back to England, and a little later he was killed by a bomb, and she was left a large house and a lot of expensive jewellery and an immense income.
Oh, it's nice the story has a happy ending.
Yes. Anyone who gets at her will have me to deal with. And I know a good many ways of making war. And some of them would not appeal to the Claude family at all.
Where on earth have you been? Everyone's been wondering where you'd got to.
Just having a cigarette out in the garden.
With David Hunter?
Yes, he was there.
But what on earth were you talking about all that time?
Oh, nothing in particular. He was telling me about his sister.
Yes, in some detail.
Where's everyone got to?
Aunt Kathy's taken them all off to demonstrate some kind of spirit-writing apparatus. And everyone's being as nice as pie to Rosaline. I wonder why.
Good morning, Mrs. Claude. I hope you don't mind my dropping in like this.
Oh, no. Please, do sit down, Mrs. Marchmont.
Oh, such a lovely day. All my early tulips are out. Are yours?
I don't know. I hadn't noticed.
Oh, of course. You have so many gardeners. They attend to all that, I imagine. But I didn't come to talk about gardens. I'll come straight to the point.
Oh.
I was wondering whether you could help me.
Help you? How?
Things are rather difficult, you see. I'm overdrawn at the bank. I owe bills everywhere, and the rates haven't been paid yet. I only seem to have half the income I used to have. You see, Gordon always used to help. He gave me an allowance, paid into the bank every quarter. He said not to worry, and of course, I never did. Everything seemed so simple when he was alive.
I'm so sorry. I didn't realise. I never thought. I'll talk to David about it.
Couldn't you just give me a cheque? Now?
I suppose I could. There is a chequebook in the desk somewhere. Oh, here it is. How much shall I make it out for?
Are you really going to marry that country clodhopper?
Of course I'm going to marry him.
How can you throw yourself away on such an idiot?
What you don't seem to understand is that I love him.
Yeah, I wonder. We all see pictures of ourselves as we want to be. You see yourself settling down with Rowley at Long Willows, but that's not the real you.
How on earth can you know what the real me is? We only met the other night. And what's the real you, if it comes to that? What do you want?
I wanted safety. Time to get over the war. But now I don't know what I want. I just wish you'd never turned up here. I was reasonably happy until I met you.
And aren't you happy now?
Look, Lynn, I... Who the devil's that going through the gate into Furrowbank?
It looks like Francis.
Yeah, going to pay a call on my little sister. And guess what she's after? Your mother has already dropped in this morning.
What on earth did she want?
Money. What else?
Money?
She got it all right.
How much?
£500. I wonder how much Francis is going to ask for. It's hardly safe to leave Rosaline alone for 5 minutes. The poor girl doesn't know how to say no.
Have there been others?
Your Aunt Kathy touched her for 250. Her mediums and seances, I suppose. She didn't want her husband to know. She hadn't realised that the worthy Lionel had already applied for a loan himself.
What must you think of us?
But something tells me that Francis is after really big money. So if you'll excuse me, I better go and put a spoke in her wheel.
Oh, David. I'm so glad you've come back. I've just been explaining to Rosalind how Gordon's death left us in rather a hole.
You see, David...
For years, Jeremy had been negotiating a rather important deal which Gordon had promised to back, and now, of course...
How much?
10,000.
Oh, that's rather a lot of money.
Oh, I know that. I wouldn't have come to you if it weren't such a fearfully difficult sum to raise. Of course, Jeremy would never have gone into the deal at all without Gordon's encouragement, and his death came at a most unfortunate time.
Leaving you all out in the cold? After a sheltered life under his wing...
You put things so picturesquely.
Rosalind can't touch the capital, you know. Only the income. And she's paying something like 19.6 in the pound income tax.
Oh, I do understand. But it could be managed, couldn't it?
It could be managed, but it won't be.
David!
What do you think Rosalind is, a milch cow? All of you are at her, begging and cadging and scrounging. But what are you doing behind her back? Sneering at her, looking down your aristocratic noses at her, wishing her dead.
That's not true.
Isn't it? We're sick of you all. You'll get no money out of us, so you can stop whining about it.
I'm sorry, Francis. I'm really sorry.
You have said that I resent Rosalind. That is not true. I do not resent Rosalind, but I do resent you. Women must live. Rosalind married a very rich man, years older than herself. Why not? But you? You're living off your sister and living off the fat of the land.
I am protecting her against the family harpies.
I shall remember what you have said, David. Goodbye.
Oughtn't have said those things to her. She's the only one of them that's been kind to me.
Only because she wanted to bleed you of every penny you possess.
Oh, someone's walking over my grave.
You realise it may come to that?
What do you mean?
I mean that 5, 6, 7 people have every reason to hurry into your grave as quickly as they can.
You can't mean that. They wouldn't commit murder. They're not nice people like the Clodes.
I'm not so sure that it isn't nice people like the Clodes who do commit murder. But they won't succeed in getting rid of you while I'm around. They'll have to see me out of the way first.
David, don't say such awful things.
Listen, if I'm ever not here, take care you look after yourself. Life isn't safe, Rosaline. It's damn dangerous. They'll get you, Rosaline. They'll get you just as soon as they have a chance.
I heard nothing more of the matter until the late spring of 1946, when I reluctantly agreed to see a Mrs. Lionel Clode, who, so my manservant Georges informed me, had something of the greatest importance to say to me.
Monsieur Poirot, I have come to you under spirit guidance.
An untidy woman, in torn tweeds, festooned in Egyptian bead necklaces, of a rather dubious origin.
Both my Ouija board and my spirit writing pointed out the path to you. It was the night before last. Madame Elvari, you've heard of her, no doubt.
No, I regret, madame, I
have not. We were using the board together, and the same initials repeated themselves over and over again. H.P., 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 of course. I did not realize their true significance at first. And then I happened to buy a copy of Picture Post. That must surely have been spirit guidance, because I invariably get the New Statesman. Mm. And there, on page 14, 2 7s, don't you see, was a picture of you and an account of how you had revealed that a famous archaeologist was in fact a German spy who was supposed to have perished in a train crash. Well, clearly, you were the person appointed by those behind the veil to elucidate the matter.
What matter, madame?
You may perhaps have read in the newspapers of the death of my poor brother-in-law Gordon Clode in an air raid nearly 2 years ago. A terrible blow to us all, and particularly to my husband, Lionel, who is his younger brother. Of course, he has no idea that I have come here. He is a doctor, you know, and doctors have a very materialistic outlook. The spiritual world is strangely hidden from them. They pin their faith in science. But what I always say is, what can science do?
And in what way, Mrs. Clode, do you believe I may be able to help you?
Do you believe in the reality of the spirit world, Monsieur Poirot?
Well, I am a good Catholic.
Blind. The church is blind. It sets itself against the beauty and the reality of the world that lies behind this one.
At 12 o'clock, madame, I have an important engagement.
Then I will come straight to the point at once. Would it be possible for you to find a missing person for me, Monsieur Poirot?
It might be possible, but the police could handle the matter a good deal more easily than I could. They have all the necessary machinery.
No, Monsieur Poirot, it is to you that the spirits have guided me. Now listen. A few weeks before his death, my brother-in-law Gordon married a young widow, a Mrs. Underhay. Her first husband had been reported dead in Africa, a mysterious country, Africa.
In what part of
Central, the home of voodoo, of the zombie.
No, the zombie comes from the West Indies.
The home of black magic, of strange and secret practices. A country where a man could disappear overnight and never be heard of again.
Probably, madame, but the same is true of Piccadilly Circus.
Twice over the last few weeks, a communication has come through from a spirit who has given his name as Robert. Each time the message is the same. Not dead. We were puzzled as we knew no Robert. We asked for further guidance and we got this. Are you? Are you? Are you? And then tell R. What does R.U. stand for, we asked. And the answer was most significant. Little Boy Blue, you see.
No, madam, I do not see.
Little Boy Blue, the nursery rhyme. Under the haycock, fast asleep. Under hay, don't you see? And my sister-in-law's name is Rosaline. Tell R. Tell Rosaline that Robert Underhay is not dead.
And did you tell her?
Of course not. People are so sceptical. And I thought it might upset the poor child, wondering where he was and what he was doing.
Apart from projecting his voice through the ether to tell you he is still alive. But why could he not write to her?
Oh, Monsieur Poirot, it is obvious that you are not an initiate. How can we know what the circumstances are? The wretched Underhay may be a prisoner somewhere in the dark heart of Africa. Think how happy it would make poor Rosaline to be restored to him. Oh, Monsieur Poirot, the voice of the spirit world cannot be doubted. They have sent me to you. Surely you will not refuse. It is such a noble mission.
Nobility, chère madame, will not pay for steamer and railway and air travel. Nor will it cover the cost of long telegrams and cables and the interrogation of witnesses.
But if Captain Underhay is found, I think I can safely say there would be no difficulty in reimbursing you.
So he is rich, then, this Underhay?
No, not exactly. But I can assure you, I can give you my word, that the money situation will not present difficulties.
However, I was not to be tempted. Nor did Mrs. Claude seem greatly surprised when I turned her down. But I could not help wondering what might be going on in Wormsley Vale, and all the time she was running through her spiritualist patter, I was trying to recall what Major Porter had said about Gordon Claude leaving everything to his wife. Could Cathy Claude's calling on me have something to do with the fact that the family all considered they had been cheated of their rightful inheritance?
Really, can you let me have £500?
£500? What's all this about?
It's quite simple. I want £500.
I could do with it myself, for that matter.
But, Rhody, this is serious. Can't you help me?
Look, Lynn, I'm overdrawn as it is, what with the new tractor and...
Yes, but you could raise the money somehow if you wanted to.
What do you want it for? Are you in some sort of a hole?
It's Mum's. She's been borrowing money from Hunter and his sister. She's in a bit of a jam financially.
Yes, I expect she is. Damn hard lines on her, but money's pretty tight generally. I wish I could help, but I can't.
I just can't stand her borrowing money from David.
But it hasn't got anything to do with him. It's Rosalind who actually has to fork out the cash, and after all, why not?
What do you mean, why not?
Well, I don't see why Rosalind shouldn't come to the rescue once in a while. Old Gordon put us all in rather a spot before he could make a proper will, just leaving the lot to Rosalind. Yeah, if the position is put clearly to Rosalind, she must see herself that a bit of help all round is indicated.
Surely you haven't borrowed from her yourself?
No, of course not. I can't very well go and ask a woman for money.
Well, then can't you see that I don't like being beholden to David Hunter?
Why the devil not? What's so special about Hunter? He's in clover, living off our money.
Oh, Rowley, it isn't like that.
What do you mean?
mean? Of course it's like that. The man's just a leech. And I don't care for the way you're always taking his side. Does he have some kind of attraction to you? Is that it? Because he was a commando and a war hero and I was stuck here mucking out the cows?
Oh, Rowley, you're just being ridiculous.
Ridiculous? I don't see anything ridiculous about despising David Hunter. And I won't have him coming between us. Do you understand?
I can't take any more of this. I'll come back when you learn to control your temper.
But there was something else that the Major had said to me about Rosaline Clowes' first husband, the mysterious Mr. Underhay. Something about a poem by Tennyson and a man calling himself Enoch Arden, come back from the dead.
I say, excuse me.
Yes? What can I do for you?
Is this the way to Walmsley Vale?
Yes. You keep right along the footpath and across that next field. Then you get to the road and you turn left, and that'll take you directly down into the village.
And is there somewhere I can stay there for a night or two?
The Stag would be your best bet. I should think you'll get a room there all right.
Yeah. Can you tell me if there's a house called Farrowbank near here?
Yes, it's up on the hill. You must have passed close by it if you came along the footpath from the station.
Oh, you mean that big white house with lions on the gateposts?
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, it must cost a fair bit to keep up.
It certainly does, and no expense spared.
And does Mrs. Clode live there?
That's right. Mrs. Gordon Clode.
Very nice of her. Well, thank you for your help. I'll try my luck at the Stag.
My arm ache.
Evening, Mr. Rowley. Pint of the usual.
If you please, Beatrice.
Been a lovely day, hasn't it?
Yes, and not before time. Tell me, have you got a stranger staying here? Big man, slouch hat?
That's right. Came along at about 6 o'clock.
He passed by my place, asked the way. I wondered who he was.
I can tell you that, all right. He signed the register. A Mr. Enoch Arden from Cape Town.
What was in the post?
Not much. Bills, 2 more charitable appeals, which can go straight into the bin. Coffee morning at the vicarage. This one must have been dropped in by hand.
What's the matter? Who's it from?
Dear Mr. Hunter, I think it's best to approach you rather than your sister, Mrs. Clode, in case the contents of this letter might come as something of a shock to her.
A shock? What kind of shock?
Briefly, I have news of Captain Robert Underhay, which she may be glad to hear. I am staying at the Stag, and if you care to call there this evening, I should be pleased to go into the matter with you. Yours faithfully, Enoch Arden.
Well, I don't understand. What does he mean? News of Captain Robert Underhay?
It's all right, Rosaline. No need to get worked up. It's a hoax of some kind.
But does it mean that...
Don't you worry. Leave it to me. This is what you've got to do. Pack a bag at once and go up to London. Go to the flat and stay there until you hear from me. Understand?
Yes, of course I understand.
Just do as I say. Tell the porter at the flat you don't want to see anyone. He's not to let anyone up but me.
Why can't I stay here?
Oh, do have some sense. You're not much of a hand at tricky stuff like this. I've got to be free to deal with this fellow, whoever he is.
Do you think that it's...
I don't think anything at the moment. The first thing is to get you out of the way. Then I can find out where we stand.
Good evening, Mr. Hunter. What can I do for you?
Have you got a Mr. Arden staying here?
Let me see. Yes. Mr. Enoch Arden, room number 5. That's on the first floor, up the stairs. Don't go along the gallery, but turn to the left and down 3 steps. He should be there. Said he'd be in all evening.
Good of you to come, Mr. Under. Take a seat. What'll you drink? Whiskey?
Yes, I'll have a spot of whiskey. Thanks.
Say when?
When?
Cider?
Just a splash.
Cheerio.
Cheerio.
You were surprised to get my letter.
Frankly, I don't understand it at all.
Oh, don't you?
I take it you knew my sister's first husband, Robert Underhay.
Yeah, I knew Robert very well, as well, perhaps, as anyone could know him. You never met him, I take it?
No.
Perhaps that's just as well.
What do you mean by that?
My dear fellow, it makes everything much simpler, that's all.
Do you mind coming to the point?
Of course. Tell me, didn't you suspect, how shall I put it, that there was anything fishy about Underhay's death?
Could you be a bit more specific?
Well, Underhay was rather a peculiar chap in some ways. It may have been chivalry, it may possibly have been for quite a different reason. Let's just say that at a particular point some years ago, there were certain advantages to Underhay being considered dead. All he had to do was to turn up about 1,000 miles away with a new name.
It seems a most fantastic proposition to me.
But what if it were true?
I should require very definite proof.
Well, I suppose Underhay himself could turn up in Walmsley Vale. How would that do for proof?
It would at least be conclusive.
But wouldn't it be a little embarrassing for Mrs. Gordon Claude? Oh, but then, of course, if Underhay were to present himself to her in person, she wouldn't be Mrs. Gordon Claude any longer, would she?
Rosaline remarried in perfectly good faith.
Of course she did, old fellow. And I'm sure any judge would say the same.
Judge?
Well, there is such a thing as bigamy, old boy.
Stop playing games. What are you driving at?
Now, don't get excited. We need to put our heads together and decide what's best to be done for your sister. If Underhay is alive, he doesn't know that his wife is married again. But if he did know, he would have to come forward. He has a very strong sense of honour. He wouldn't like Rosaline inheriting money to which she wasn't entitled.
Look, is he alive or isn't he?
If he is, he's in a pretty bad way. He needs urgent medical attention, special treatment. All, unfortunately, rather expensive. And the poor devil's practically destitute.
I wonder if he's quite the chivalrous gentleman you make him out to be.
He was once, but life is inclined to make one cynical. The spectacle of too much wealth arouses one's baser instincts.
So that's what it's all about. You're nothing but a damned blackmailer. I've a good mind to call your bluff.
You could do that, of course, but what if I go to the Clouds? Tell them that Robert Underhay is still very much alive.
You wouldn't get anything out of them. They haven't a penny between them.
Ah, but there is such a thing as a working agreement. The first payment could be deferred until the day it's proved Underhay is alive and Mrs. Claude is still his wife, and the will null and void.
How much?
20,000.
Out of the question. My sister can't touch the capital. She only has a life interest.
10,000, then. She can raise that easily. There's jewellery, isn't there?
All right. You'll have to give me time.
You have 48 hours.
Make it Tuesday.
Very well. He'll bring the money here, in notes, at 9 o'clock, and don't try anything clever. I've met your kind before.
"258.
Mr. Rowley, it's Beatrice. From the Stack.
And what can I do for you, Beatrice?
It's something I found out last night. About that man you asked about, Mr. Enoch Arden. I've discovered something you ought to know. Can you come round to the Stag this evening? I can't go into it over the phone.
Well, of course I can.
In the hall, down the passage to the left, there's a door marked private. Wait for me in there.
All right, Beatrice. I'll be round just before 7.
I hope you don't think I'm poking my nose in, but we always thought what a dreadful shame it was. Your uncle dying like that, and all the money going to that person. Mm. And you and Miss Marchmont hoping to get married and...
Well, it's very nice of you to say so, Beatrice.
Well, now, some things happened that may change all that. The very next evening after that Mr. Arden arrived, Mr. Hunter came here and asked for him.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes. Very out of temper he looked, as if something had happened to upset him.
Go on.
Well, a little after he went up, I had occasion to go into room 4 to see about the towels and bed linen. That's next door to number 5, and as it happens, there's a communicating door. Not that you'd know from room number 5 because of a big wardrobe that stands right across it. And quite by chance, the door was just a little open, though who opened it, I've no idea. And so I couldn't help overhearing what was going on. It was all to do with someone called Underhay.
Good evening. Is Jeremy... Is Mr. Claude in by any chance? I wonder if I might have a word with him.
Mr. and Mrs. Claude are still at dinner, sir, but I'm sure they wouldn't mind if you joined them.
Oh, no, I'll let them finish their dinner in peace. I'll wait in my uncle's study, if I may. I'll be quite happy in there, surrounded by the family portraits.
I wonder what Rowley wants.
Oh, probably fallen foul of some government regulation. No farmer can understand a quarter of the forms they're supposed to fill in. Rowley's a conscientious fellow. He gets worried.
He's a nice boy, but terribly slow. I have a feeling things aren't going awfully well between him and Lynn. You're not listening to me, are you?
I'm sorry, my dear. The trouble is, I can't really think about anything.
Try not to think. Put it out of your mind. Everything's going to be all right.
You frighten me sometimes, Frances. You're so terribly reckless. You don't realise...
I realise everything. And I'm not afraid. In fact, I'm rather enjoying myself.
That, my dear, is just what worries me.
You better go and see what Rowley wants. Go and help him fill in his form 11,099 or whatever it is.
Oh. Sounds as if he's got tired of waiting.
Well, I don't see why. He hasn't been there 5 minutes and he could perfectly well have joined us in here.
Mr. Rowley says he'll call back.
Thank you, Edna. So what was all that about, I wonder?
You know, Lynn, I really think we should try and hire a second gardener. Old Harold's finding it more and more difficult to keep up with things.
But where on earth is the money going to come from? Are you going to ask Rosaline to pay for it?
Well, she couldn't have been nicer last time.
There's nothing much you can do about it at the moment, Mums. She's gone back to London with her brother.
I wonder if he really is her brother.
What on earth do you mean by that?
There's been a certain amount of gossip, you know. That type of young woman, the adventurous type, they've usually got a young man in tow.
That's ridiculous.
Suppose she told Gordon she wanted her brother to live with them. This Hunter chap turns up. How is Gordon to know if it's her brother or not?
But David's not like that. And she isn't either. She's a fool, perhaps, but she's sweet. It's just people's foul minds.
There's no need to get worked up about it.
I'm going out. I need to get a breath of fresh air. Blow all this stupid gossip out of my head.
But it's getting dark. You don't want to go out on your own.
I've walked through the back streets of Alexandria by myself. Surely Walmsley Vale can't be worse than that.
Well, at least put your coat on.
How easy it was in the war days, when everything was planned and orderly and all the decisions were taken by somebody else. Now I feel completely lost among people I hardly seem to recognise. Except Rowley. He's exactly as he was when I left him 4 years ago. But I've changed. I'm not the same Lynn. David!
Oh.
Where on earth did you come from?
What on earth are you doing out here all by yourself?
I don't know, really. I've been walking about, thinking about things. And what are you doing here, anyway? I thought you were up in town.
Well, I had to get some things from Furrowbank. I'm on my way back to London.
Oh, you should have been home ages ago. What time is it? My watch has stopped.
9:10. I must run like a hare to catch the last train. Rosaline's alone in the flat. She always gets the jitters if she's left by herself.
I thought it was a service flat.
Oh, fear isn't logical. Not after you've been pulled out of the rubble of a bombed building.
I'm sorry. I'd forgotten.
Yeah, soon forgotten. What we were in the war. Back to safety, back to where we were when the whole bloody show started. Creep into our rotten little holes and play safe again. You too, Lynn. You're just the same as the rest of them.
I'm not. I'm not, David. I'm not like the others.
Aren't you, Lynn? Let's see. Are you really going to marry that country bumpkin?
I don't know.
You belong to me. But I must go. I must get my train.
David!
I'll ring you. I'll ring you just as soon as I get back to London.
Where on earth have you been? You've been out for hours.
Nowhere in particular. Just walking about.
Well, I wish you wouldn't. You know how worried I get. And I wanted to talk to you about the bridesmaids.
The bridesmaids?
I only hope they'll be able to produce their clothing coupons. It's very lucky for you, having your demob ones.
Yes, very lucky.
You're terribly restless tonight. There's nothing the matter, is there?
What should be the matter?
There's no need to jump down my throat, dear. Now, I really think you ought to ask the McCrae girl to be one of them. Her mother was my closest friend, remember?
I loathe Joe McCrae and always have.
I know, dear, but does that really matter? After all, I wouldn't like to upset Marjorie.
But it is my wedding.
Yes, I know that, dear,
if there is a wedding.
What on earth do you mean?
Oh, nothing, Mums.
You haven't quarrelled with Rowley, have you?
No, of course not. Don't fuss, everything's all right.
I've always felt that you'd be so safe with Rowley.
Safe? Who wants to be safe? Was that the telephone?
No, You must be hearing things. Are you expecting a call?
No, not at all.
Now that is the telephone.
I'll get it. 432.
Lynn, is that you?
Yes, Aunt Kathy, it's me.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm afraid I'm in rather a muddle about the coffee morning. Is it Wednesday or Thursday?
It's Friday, Aunt Kathy. It always is.
Oh, of course it is. I knew you'd be able to tell me. I really can't imagine how I get things so muddled up. Oh, but as I always say, everything goes wrong at once. Our telephone is out of order, so I had to come out to the call box. But then I found I hadn't got the right change. But as luck would have it, there was a woman just coming out of the phone box, and she was able to give me pennies for my halfpennies. Oh, such a strange person, too. Daubed in makeup with a scarf tied round her head. The funny thing was that I'm almost sure I've seen her before. She must, I think, have been someone who'd passed over.
But in that case, how could she have given you the change?
Oh, you must never underestimate the power of the spirit world. It is wonderful the way people are sent to one in one's moment of need. But I mustn't keep you any longer. Friday, you said.
Yes, Aunt Kathy, Friday. Good night.
Who was that?
Oh, only Aunt Kathy. Just one of her usual muddles about the coffee morning.
Oh. Time I was off to bed. I'm going to make myself a cup of cocoa. Can I get you one?
No, thanks, Mums.
Good night, then. Don't stay up too late.
I won't. Good night. What on earth's the matter with me tonight? Why do I so desperately want David to ring? It's madness, sheer madness. Wormsley Vale 432.
Wormsley 432? Can Miss Lynn Marchmont take a personal call from London?
Lynn Marchmont speaking.
Please replace the receiver. You'll be called in a moment.
Wormsley Vale 432.
Lynn, is that you?
David.
I had to speak to you.
Yes?
Look, Lynn, I think I'd better clear out.
What do you mean?
Clear out of England altogether. What's the good of it all, you and I? It wouldn't work out. You're a wonderful girl, Lynn, but I'm a bit of a crook. Always have been. And it's no good flattering yourself that I'd go straight for your sake. I might mean to, but I know it wouldn't work. You'd be better off with Rowley. He'll never give you a day's anxiety as long as you live. I should give you hell. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
You didn't say anything.
What is there to say?
Lynn.
Yes?
Oh, to hell with everything.
Mr. Arden? Mr. Arden? It's past 10 o'clock. You haven't taken in your tea. Mr. Arden? Are you all right? Mr. Arden? Oh, my God!
Wormsley Vale Police Station. Sergeant Edwards speaking.
This is Beatrice Lippincott from the Stag Hotel.
Good morning, Miss Lippincott. What can I do for you?
There's been an accident to one of our guests, a Mr. Enoch Arden. He's lying on the floor. I think he's been hit over the head. It looks as if he's dead.
Thank you for coming round so promptly, Mr. Claude. It's Mr. Rowley Claude, isn't it?
That's right, Superintendent.
Difficult with so many members of the same family living in the village. Now, I understand you may be able to throw some light on this problem we're investigating. The man who was killed last night at the Stag.
Have you identified the fellow?
No, I wouldn't say we have. He signed the register as Enoch Arden. There's nothing in his possession to show that he was Enoch Arden. Now, I understand that you went to see him last night. Why did you do that?
Presumably you've talked to Beatrice Lippincott at the Stag.
She found the body, and I've heard her story.
So she told you what she overheard, about the possibility that Robert Underhay might still be alive?
Yes, she did mention it.
Well, I hardly need to explain that if he were alive, it would make a big difference to the family. I had taken it for granted that Rosalind Claude's first husband was definitely dead. It took me a bit of time to realise the implications of it all.
I had to let the possibilities sink in, if you know what I mean.
I can appreciate that.
My first instinct was to talk it all through with my uncle. He's a lawyer.
Mr. Jeremy Clode, you mean?
Yes, so I went round to see him. Must have been some time after 8. They were still at dinner, so I sat in Jeremy's study to wait for him.
Yes, Mr. Clode?
And I began to have second thoughts. Jeremy's very cautious. I suppose all lawyers are. Likes to play everything by the book. And the information I'd got had come to me in rather a hole-and-corner manner. He might not be very happy about acting on it. I thought perhaps I should find out more about this Enoch Arden before taking things any further.
So you called in on him at the stairs?
Yes, I did.
And what time was it?
Well, I wouldn't like to say exactly. About 8:30. Perhaps nearer to 8:40.
Carry on, Mr. Clark.
Well, I knew where he was. Beatrice had given me the number of his room, so I went straight up. Somehow I don't think I handled the business very well. I thought he'd be frightened when I hinted he was up to a bit of blackmail, but this only seemed to amuse him. He asked me if I was in the market too, as a buyer. He wanted to know how much I, or the family, would be prepared to pay for proof that Robert Underhay was still alive and kicking.
So what was your answer, Mr. Clode?
Well, I asked him why the devil I should pay anything at all. And he laughed and said, because I've got a client coming later this evening who will certainly pay a very substantial sum for proof that Robert Underhay is dead. Well, I'm afraid I rather lost my temper at that and told him that my family weren't used to doing that kind of dirty business. If Underhay was still alive, the fact ought to be quite easy to establish. And he looked me straight in the eye and said in rather a funny tone, I don't think you'll prove it without my cooperation.
And then?
I went back home, feeling rather disturbed. Frankly, I felt I'd rather messed things up. I wished I'd left it to Uncle Jeremy to tackle after all. A lawyer's used to dealing with slippery customers.
What time did you leave the stag?
It must have been before 9, because I heard the pips for the news coming from the window of a house in the village.
Did Arden say who this client was that he was expecting?
He didn't, but... but I took it for granted that it was David Hunter. Who else would it be?
I thought he was supposed to be up in London.
He is, but he was definitely in Walmsley Vale yesterday. I saw him get off the train.
These tongs. Did you notice them in the grate, Mr. Clode? No, don't touch them.
I don't think I did. The fire wasn't lit. Were they what...
Yes. According to the medical evidence, he was struck down from behind and the blows with the tongs were delivered from above.
Arden was a pretty cocksure sort of chap, but all the same, I wouldn't have turned my back on a man I was trying to bleed white. Particularly a man like Hunter, who'd done some pretty tough fighting with the commandos.
Yes, if he'd been a bit more cautious, he'd probably still be alive.
If only I hadn't stalked out like that. I ought to have pretended the family were in the market. But who were we to compete against Rosalind and her brother? They'd have had no trouble in raising the money.
Have you seen this lighter before?
I have seen it somewhere, yes. D.H. Not much doubt whose initials those are.
And this lipstick?
Not really in my line, Superintendent.
Brunette colouring, I should say.
It's funny the things you policemen know. So... there's a lady in the case, is there? And you definitely have not been able to identify the dead man.
Have you any ideas yourself, Mr. Clode?
None at all. But this fellow seemed to be the only connection to Underhay. Now that he's dead, finding Underhay is going to be like looking for a needle in a haystack.
The murderer is bound to generate a good deal of publicity. If Underhay is alive and gets to read about it, he may come forward.
I shouldn't think there's much chance of that. All the more reason now for him to continue to lie low. I rather think that round one has gone to David Hunter.
Who are you? What do you want?
Mr. Hunter.
What if I am? How the devil did you get past the porter in the hall?
Superintendent Spence from Walmsley Vale. Can I have a word with you, sir?
I'm so sorry, Superintendent. I thought you were a tout. Won't you come in?
Thank you.
Rosaline, this is Superintendent Spence.
Oh, good afternoon, Superintendent.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Clerk.
Do sit down. Can I get you a drink?
No, thank you, Mr. Hunter.
So, what's amiss in Wormsley Vale? Has our cook been dealing on the black market?
It's rather more serious than that. A man was found with his head stove in a room at the Stag early this morning.
Superintendent, no more details. My sister is rather delicate. If you mention blood and horrors, she'll probably faint.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Clode. Anyway, it was murder. No question of that.
So where do we come in?
We hoped you might be able to tell us something about the dead man, Mr. Hunter.
Why me?
You called to see him on Saturday evening last. His name, or the name he was registered under, was Enoch Arden.
Oh, that chap. Well, I'm afraid I can't help you. I know next to nothing about the man.
Was his name really Enoch Arden?
I should very much doubt it.
Why did you go to see him?
He spun me one of the usual hard luck stories, mentioned people I'd known in the war.
Did he mention any other names to you? That of Robert Underhay, for instance?
What makes you mention him?
Information received.
Do you have any idea who Underhay was, Superintendent?
Suppose you tell me, sir.
He was my sister's first husband. He died in Africa some years ago.
Are you quite sure of that?
Oh, yes. That is so, isn't it, Rosaline?
Robert died of fever, Blackwater fever.
Sometimes stories get about that aren't quite true, Mrs. Clode.
Robert is dead.
From information in my possession, I understand that this man, Arden, claimed to be a friend of Robert Underhay and informed you that he was alive.
That's nonsense.
You definitely state that the name of Robert Underhay was not mentioned.
Oh, it was mentioned. Ah. The poor fellow had known Underhay.
There was no question of blackmail.
Blackmail? I don't understand you.
Don't you really, Mr. Hunter? Just as a matter of form, where were you last night between 7 and 11?
Just as a matter of form, Superintendent, suppose I refuse to answer.
Aren't you behaving rather childishly?
I don't think so. I've always disliked being bullied. And now will you get the hell out of here?
Very good, sir, but I've something to ask Mrs. Clode first.
I won't have my sister worried.
Quite so. Well, I want her to look at the body and tell me if she can identify it. I'm within my rights there. Why not let her come down to Wormsley Vale with me and get it over with? Arden knew Underhay, you say, so he may have known Mrs. Underhay, and therefore she may know him.
I'll come, of course, Superintendent.
Good for you, Rosaline.
Do you want me to come now?
That would be very nice of you, Mrs. Clode. I'll arrange for a car to take you down.
Don't worry, Rosaline. I'll be with you.
Will that be all right, Superintendent?
Certainly. I'll let them know we're on our way.
It'll only take a minute, Rosaline. Now, don't get worked up. He'll look perfectly peaceful, just as if he were asleep. Be a brave girl now. In you go.
You must think I'm a terrible coward, Superintendent. But when you find that everyone in the house is dead, all dead but you...
I understand, Mrs. Clove. It must have been a terrible experience. Are you ready?
I'm ready. God rest his soul. I've never seen that man before in my life. I don't know who he is.
So that settles it, Mr. Clode. She says that he's not Robert Underhay, and that she's never seen him before.
Does it settle it, Superintendent?
I think a jury would believe her, in the absence of evidence to the contrary.
Evidence to the contrary? Thank you, Superintendent.
And it was at this point I re-entered the story. For 3 days later, my manservant, Georges, announced that a Mr. Holy Claude had come to see me.
It's rather a long story, I'm afraid.
It was indeed a long story, much of which I already knew. But, at long last, Mr. Claude came to the point.
What I'm after is this. I want you to find out who this Enoch Arden really was.
Who do you think he was, Mr. Claude?
Well, I mean... Enoch Arden. It isn't a real name. I looked it up. It's a poem by Lord Tennyson about a chap who comes back from a long voyage and finds that his wife has married some other fellow.
And him that other reigning in his place, lord of his right and of his children's love.
Well, quite.
Very touching story. But the Enoch Arden of the poem chose never to reveal himself. The man found dead at the Stag was obviously a very different kind of character. And you suspect he might have been Robert Underhay himself. Now, was there anything that might identify him?
Only the fact that he'd registered at the Stag under Enoch Arden.
What about his papers?
He didn't have any.
What, no letters? Not even a ration card?
Nothing at all.
Mm-hmm. That is very interesting. And was Rosaline Claude asked by the police to identify the body?
Yes, she was. She told them that he was a complete stranger to her.
Eh bien, then that answers your question.
I don't think it does. If the dead man is Underhay, then Rosaline was never my uncle's wife, and she's not entitled to a penny of his money. So she had a very good reason not to recognize the body.
But surely there are plenty of people who could say for certain that the dead man is or is not Robert Underhay.
It doesn't seem to be so easy. That's what I want you to do. Find someone who knows Underhay.
Why me?
I heard a fellow talking about you. Said you were a wizard at that sort of thing. I don't know about your fees. We're rather a stony broke family. But I dare say we could cough it up amongst the lot of us.
Someone who knows Robert Underhay. Yes, I think that perhaps it might be managed. In fact, I am certain it can. Will you come back here this afternoon?
Yes, I suppose I could. But surely you can't do anything in that short a time.
I have my methods.
Of course. I don't know how you people do these things.
But in fact, the problem presented no difficulty. I had only to look up the address of the man who told me the whole strange story in the first place, Major Porter of 22A Camden Hill, and take Rowley Claude along to meet him.